Today at Reader's Corner, Craig Johnson, author of The Western Star, the 13th novel in the Longmire mystery series. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. Sheriff Walt Longmire, his sidekick Henry Standing Bear, and the wide open spaces of Absaroka County are the fictional creations of author Craig Johnson. But they also have found their way into popular culture. In addition to the best-selling series of novels, there's a real-life Longmire Days Festival that each summer draws thousands of fans to Buffalo, Wyoming. And there's a website where you can purchase Longmire for Sheriff bumper stickers and other memorabilia, and a hit Netflix original series starring Robert Taylor as the beloved sheriff that is now entering its sixth and final season. Mr. Johnson joins us today from his ranch in Ucross, Wyoming, to talk about all things Longmire, including the latest book in his mystery series titled The Western Star. In this 13th Longmire novel, the story switches between present day and 1972, when a young Walt Longmire, recently returned from Vietnam, is just 2 weeks into his new job in law enforcement. The train, the Western Star, plays a central role as Walt is pulled into the center of a murder mystery and a devastating collision of past and present. Craig Johnson is the award-winning author of 13 full-length novels, as well as three works of short fiction featuring the sheriff of Absaroka County. He was a featured speaker at the Sun Valley Writers Conference this past summer, where he spoke about how he came to write the series of contemporary Western crime novels and how his life has changed as a result. Mr. Johnson joins us today by phone from his ranch. Craig Johnson, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you must be the rock star among Wyoming sheriffs. That's all I've got to say. And I have to wonder, has any sheriff running for office or re-election claimed the support of Sheriff Longmire?
No, nobody's claimed support for him like that. But it did get me into kind of a little bit of trouble here with the local sheriff in Johnson County, because the Walt Longmire for Sheriff bumper stickers craze, you know, kind of got to the point there where Walt was actually giving our local sheriff a run for his money in his most recent election. And so I had to go in and apologize, like, to the sheriff and tell him I was really sorry about that. I had no intentions of trying to have my fictitious sheriff take his job. So
when you moved into Wyoming and got this idea for the series, why the sheriff? What brought you to the county sheriff as opposed to some other official or non-official?
Well, it didn't seem like there were a lot of books at that point in time that were being written about sheriffs. And it kind of like dawned on me that, you know, that this is kind of a very special kind of law enforcement, in the sense that it's the only elected law enforcement official in the country. So you kind of have a more of a connection, I think, you know, to the community whose laws that you serve. And I kind of, you know, that's the way that I saw Walt. I see him as being, you know, a lot more connected, you know, to the community and to the people, so that there would be a lot more interaction. Mm-hmm. I didn't want him to be one of those guys in the chrome-plated sunglasses that, you know, like glared at people from his car or something like that. I wanted him to know the history of the county. I wanted him to know the history of the state and the history of the people, like that, and have a lot more interaction, kind of, you know, forcing me to deal more with place and, you know, character, you know, more than, you know, the whodunit aspects of the books. And, you know, not that I don't enjoy that part too, like that, but I just wanted to try and do something a little bit different.
It's clearly a Western tale, but on the other hand, you seem to have steered clear of the Western stereotype. And no better example of that than Walt himself, who has quite the literary background.
He does. It was one of the things I was kind of shooting for, in the sense that, you know, if you're going to write within a genre, there's going to be a certain amount of baggage that's going to go along with that. And when you're writing Western mystery, then you're carrying twice the amount of baggage. And so one of the ways of dealing with that baggage is, you know, by taking it kind of head on, you know, and trying mm-hmm. to do something a little bit different with it, acknowledging it. And then I think also, you know, trying to deal with it with a sense of humor. It's kind of a combined knowledge that you're going to have, you know, with all of those people, you know, that have seen all of those Western movies, that have read all those mystery novels, you know, and all those tropes that are going to come up. You better acknowledge them and try and utilize them in the best ways that you can. And a lot of time the humor has a lot to do with that. And, you know, that's one of the key aspects, you know, of Walt's nature. to go along with the fact that, you know, he also is a reader. He's an extraordinarily well-read individual. It's kind of fun for me because the books have been translated into about 17 different languages. And sometimes when I'm overseas, you know, I'll sometimes get the question, boy, Walt Longmire sure does seem smart for a Wyoming sheriff. And I'm never quite sure what they're, you know, what they're intoning there, that if they're making fun of me about Wyoming or sheriffs. But it's been kind of nice, like, I get to try and do something a little bit different, you know, because, you know, a lot of the protagonists in, you know, crime fiction tend to be the 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal mm-hmm. kind of character. And Walt really just isn't that way. You know, Walt is, he's what I tend to refer to as over. He's overweight, he's overage, he's overly depressed, you know, but he still attempts to try and get the job done. And I think that makes him a little bit more like all of us.
And his sidekick is not exactly Tonto. That would be Henry Standing Bear. And again, you seem to be dispelling a myth here or a stereotype of sorts. And if we could start with this whole notion, because I know we'll get into these terms. You use the term Indian, and you point out to people why you use that term as opposed to Native American, something you learned on the res.
I do. Like, it's interesting, like, that, because, you know, political correctness really hasn't gotten all that far up on the res. My ranch is just to the south of the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow Reservation. And so I have a lot of interaction, you know, with both tribes. And, I mean, they're friends, neighbors, you know, almost family. And to leave them out of the books, you know, would be, you know, almost critically criminal, you know, to be honest, without, you know, trying to be funny about it. But, you know, yeah, I do use the term Indian simply because my friends up on the res make fun of me when I'm trying to be politically correct and try and say something like Native American. They always look at me and say, "Where were you born?" And I always say, "Well, I was born in America." So you would be a Native American too, then, wouldn't you? So I think, you know, with them, it's a lot more important that you get the tribal designations, you know, right. You don't want to call somebody who's Assiniboine Lakota or somebody who's Cheyenne Crow. You want to make sure you get those tribal designations right. But it's another opportunity to show, you know, people as they are, not, mm-hmm. you know, as some sort of stock, you know, background characters that are just going to be set dressing, you know, in the novels. These are people. These are really incredibly, you know, complex, you know, and amazing people. And to me, you know, they desperately need to be in the books, you know, for no other reason than you can also look at it and say, okay, well, there are, you know, little enough ethnicities on the high plains of the American West as it is. Like, and to leave them out, you know, would just be a horrible thing to do. You know, in many ways, it's funny because, you know, people will ask me, they'll say, you know, well, is Henry, you know, kind of Walt's sidekick? And I'm always saying, well, you know, if you read the books, it's almost as if Walt is more like Henry's sidekick, if you want to get right down to it.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I believe that Henry Standing Bear spins off of someone you know quite well, a good friend.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of my favorite quotes is the one from Wallace Stegner on Writing and Teaching Fiction, where he says that, you know, the greatest piece of fiction ever written is the disclaimer at the beginning of every book that says nobody in this book is based off anybody alive or dead. And what a crock that is, like that, because that's your job, to go find interesting people, you know, and use them in your books as characters. And the difficulty with that, of course, is that I live in a state that has only 500,000 people in it. And so just about everybody knows who I'm talking about whenever I stick people in my books. And it's even worse up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, simply because there are only 5,000 enrolled members of the tribe itself. And so whenever I use any of them in my books, everybody knows who it is that I'm talking about. And so I can pretty much go down the line of all of the characters in my books and give you the human equivalency up on the res, like, of every single one of them. I mean, Henry's based off of a good friend of mine, Marcus Red Thunder. Lonnie Littlebird is based off a good friend of mine, Charles Little Old Man. You know, Mandy Smoker Broadus is Dina Minicamp. I mean, I can go all the way down the list with all of these people. Like that, and it's kind of fun, like that, because, you know, with the success of the television show and with the books, it's been kind of fun to watch, because there are lots of people up on the res that claim to be in my books that I've never met, and so I kind of take that as a compliment. I think that's flattering.
You're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is Craig Johnson, author of The Western Star, the latest release in the Longmire Mystery Series. So I want to talk about one other inspiration for your book. And I read this weeks ago, probably in preparing to see you at the Sun Valley Writers Conference. But it was an interview you had with someone where you were talking about your dad and how you were really freaked out over the fact that your dad might think he was this one character in the novel, and it was like, oh man, you don't want to go there. And you were utterly surprised. Does this ring a bell?
Oh yeah,
You were amazed to find that he had a different take on it. Please tell
the story. it was kind of funny like that because, I mean, you know, like I say, you know, it's just too easy to utilize people, you know, from your life, you know, and use them as characters in your books. And, you know, an awful lot of the time you don't get that opportunity. An awful lot of the time you have to do what I tend to refer to as a kind of a Dr. Frankenstein thing where you have to take bits and pieces of a lot of different people to make the character that you need to tell the story that you want to tell like that. But every once in a while, you know, you'll have somebody in your head that is, you know, kind of, you know, perfect for the whole thing. And there's an older sheriff in the books, Lucian Connolly, who's kind of Walt's mentor, like who was the sheriff who hired Walt back in 1972 when he got back from Vietnam. And it's an interesting character. He's a little bit crotchety, a little bit old school and all of this. But I remember writing the first book in the series, The Cold Dish, and sending a copy of it, you know, to my brother. And when he read it, I called him up on the phone. I said, have you read that manuscript I sent over? And he goes, yeah, I have, and you're dead. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, Craig, the old sheriff, Lucian Connolly, the one that Walt goes and plays chess with on Tuesday nights at the Home for Assisted Living, that's our dad. And I was like, oh, no, I thought I hid that really well. And he goes, no, he looks like dad, he acts like dad, he talks like dad. The only thing you did was change his name and cut off one of his legs. And I don't think that's going to fool dad. And so I said, I got to go. And he goes, I bet you do. And so I called up my mother and father, and I said, have you guys read that manuscript I sent over? And my mother was the one on the phone, and she said, oh, yeah, we have. You know, honey, it's so good. I mean, she's my mother. What's she going to say? And then I said, has dad read any of the manuscript yet? And she goes, oh, yeah, he's about two-thirds of the way through. And I thought, oh, he's definitely read the Lucian parts, you know. So I'm trying to think of how I'm going to ask this next question. And my mother comes back on the phone and says, honey, your father thinks he's Walt Longmire. And so I didn't know what to say to that. And that's when she added, let's not disabuse him of that thought, shall we?
Exactly.
So my father, you know, pretty much went to his grave pretty sure that he was Walt Longmire. But I got an email maybe about a week after that from a guy from up in Canada. And he wrote and said, don't worry about it. We all think we're Walt Longmire.
So there's another character in your book that plays a key role, Vic. And this is a woman, again, one of your assistants. And in this particular case, I was fascinated by the fact that in your novel, you, I believe, managed at one point to have Walt have a relationship with Vic. In the TV series, they steered clear of that. And I thought, boy, isn't that interesting? We oftentimes accuse Hollywood of going straight for the sex. And here the author went for the sex. The TV series did not.
It was a little bit different, in the sense that, there are always, an awful lot of advice that you get when you first start out, as an author. And one of the big pieces of advice that I got was from a lot of other mystery and Western authors. They said, well, you can have your characters have, a sexual tension, but you can't have them consummate anything, for at least 17 or 18 books. And my immediate response to that was, what kind of women are you dating that would wait 17 or 18 years for something to happen?
That's right.
It just didn't seem realistic. And I thought, well, if there is a sexual tension, between these two characters, if you handle it correctly, it should do nothing but complicate the characters' lives, and not take the edge, off of the evolution of the characters, and allowing them, to evolve, and develop as they should in a series of books. And so, in the third book, Kindness Goes Unpunished, Walt and Vic happen to be in Philadelphia, and it's a highly critical situation, but it's strangers in a strange land, and that's when those type of things, just generally happen.
Right.
And all it did was really just kind of complicate, their relationship. And I think, it did nothing but add to the complexities of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe one of the key elements might have been, that I kind of did a role reversal on their response, to this accidental, liaison that they had. And, I gave, Walt, the much more stereotypical female response, which, when two friends, find themselves in that situation where he said, that was a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're never going to do that again. So we're just going to forget that happened and just, move on with our lives. And Vic had the much more stereotypical response, which was, that was really great. And I had a great time. And I have every intention of doing it again, as a matter of fact. And like I said, all it does is just complicate, you know, this relationship that they have as the books have moved on. I mean, I'm 10 books down the road, you know, from that act, and it continues to provide, you know, just worlds, you know, of material for me to work with as far as the books are concerned.
But that so accurately reflects the real complexity of life. I mean, that's exactly the way I would assume it would play itself out in real life. So why wouldn't it be that way for Vic and Walt?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think that what they refer to it in the TV venue is the moonlighting effect. Like, I guess there was that TV show Moonlighting, and as soon as the two characters got together, like after all the sexual tension, it just kind of went south like that. But I think the trick is not doing it in a predictable fashion, trying to do something with it, you know, that's a little bit different, you know. And once again, you know, this is not, you know, something that's, you know, home and hearth. You know, this is something that's, you know, a kind of an on-again, off-again kind of thing, you know, which I think, you know, that Vic is much more comfortable with than Walt is from being from a different generation. Like, and so it's a little bit more difficult for him. And once again, you know, those complications, I think, are what it is that make a series, you know, worth, you know, reading. You know, I mean, an awful lot of the time, you know, we've all started series of books, you know, that start off great, but then you get about 7 or 8 books in, and it seems like, you know, they're recycling the plots. It seems like the characters really aren't developing or growing. You know, they're doing the same things that they did, you know, 17 books previously. And I don't know, at that point in time, I think, you know, you got to seriously, you know, start asking yourself some tough questions as to, you know, why it is that you're writing a series of books, you know, because for me, you know, the evolution of a series of books is all about the evolution of that character. You have to allow that character to evolve. Got to get more and more complicated as it goes and see where it happens.
Well, I want to talk about this in a minute, but I just have to say that the new book, The Western Star, is a perfect example of an author not getting into the bind of repeating yourself, so to speak. This is not a recycled plot. This is ingenious, and I compliment you on that. It's somewhat different from so many of your previous novels, and I found it fascinating. But before we get there, now that I've brought us into this nexus between the book and the TV series, I don't know how many authors I've heard or read comment, yeah, well, I wrote a good book and then it got to the screenwriters, and by the time I saw it on the screen, I didn't recognize it and they just missed everything. And you hear all these complaints. You were an executive consultant. You are an executive consultant on the Longmire TV series. And I get the impression from the interview I heard with Gordon Van Sauter at Sun Valley that didn't exactly turn out for you the way it did for many. As a matter of fact, that may be because you understand the difference between a book and a TV series or a movie.
Well, I think you've got to go into it, you know, with your eyes open. And I think also, you know, it's just a question of who it is that you happen to be working with. I mean, an awful lot of the time, you know, you're going to be a victim to, you know, the quality of individuals that you're going to be working with. And, you know, Hollywood being the way Hollywood is, with the amount of egos and money involved, there are an awful lot of questionably scrupulous people that are involved with that particular line of work, especially when it comes to their treatment of considering the respect for the written word. Sometimes, you know, that's the last thing that they're concerned with. And, you know, just as a, you know, as an example, you know, an awful lot of the time, you know, whenever Hollywood gets a hold of your work, one of the first things they do is try and get rid of the writer as quick as they possibly can, simply because they know that they're going to try and do something different, you know, with what it is that you've created. And, you know, and a lot of authors are really just not open to that. They're just really, you know, not flexible enough to realize that this is a different art form, you know, that it's not going to be exactly like your books, and probably with very good reason, because, you know, a definitive adaptation of your books may not work on television. The whole idea that I had from the get-go was that, you know, that the people that I was going to be working with, these producers, they had track records. They had, like, wonderful shows that they had produced and things that they had done. And for a cowboy from a town of 25 to try and tell them how to produce a television show, we would have been off to a pretty rocky start right there from the get-go, I think. But they were really pretty wonderful. I was very, very lucky, you know, that with the people that I got involved with Greer Shepherd, John Coveney, Hunt Baldwin, you know, some really wonderful people that had done a number of shows like Nip Tuck and all these others. And so I thought, well, okay, you know, this might be, you know, a good opportunity. But I think you've got to realize that you have to loosen your grip a little bit and allow them to utilize, you know, the tropes and, you know, the imagination and designs like that will work in Hollywood and in television production and feature film production that, you know, might not work in a novel, but, you know, it's like any other job. You try and get the very best people that you can get, and then you do the hardest thing in the world. Leave them alone. Let them do what they do best. And we were extraordinarily fortunate. I mean, the television show was the highest-rated scripted drama in its network history. It ran for 3 seasons, like, and then, you know, through a scrappy little fight, you know, between the production studio and the network, it got dropped. And then something amazing happened. There was this new service that was coming along that everybody was saying, oh, my gosh, that'll never take off. That'll never work. You watch TV on your computer. That's not going to work. A streaming? What is streaming? And then all of a sudden, Netflix suddenly became, you know, the hottest production studio in Hollywood. And we kind of rode the crest of that particular wave for 3 seasons. And so we're coming up to our 6th season, and it's just been a heck of a ride. It's been a blast, I have to say.
I'm Bob Custer, a host of Reader's Corner. Today I'm speaking with Craig Johnson about The Western Star, the 13th book in the mystery series starring Sheriff Walt Longmire. You've been on site, I assume, and you were, from what I've read, you were consulted. You're there to provide advice and counsel on how to get something done based on your novels.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that for them was just, you know, just a question of convenience to a certain extent. Like, not only to mention, you know, the economic aspect of it. I mean, they could hire, you know, 7 different consultants, you know, to tell them about, you know, jurisdictional applications, you know, of a Wyoming sheriff on the reservation. You know, all of these different aspects of the books that I had been working with for 7 or 8 years by the time they got a hold of me. Or they could just, you know, put a retainer on me and kind of have, you know, call me up in the middle of the night with questions about anything that they came up with. And, you know, one of the dirty little secrets about my books, of course, is that the majority of them tend to come from newspaper articles all over, you know, Wyoming and Montana. Just simply because it keeps the, you know, the books grounded in a reality like that. Well, I've got file folders full of all of these newspaper articles that I've picked up from these small town newspapers. And one of the first things that I did, you know, at the very beginning of production was to send them copies of all of these newspaper articles, you know, so that they would have that backlog of material to work with, the same that I had. And by golly, if they didn't use every single one of them in the last 6 years, I got to tell you.
That's great. So just a couple of things about the actors. I'm looking at Cowboys and Indians, the October 2017 edition. And here he is, Longmire, on the cover. But Longmire is...
But I look exactly like him.
There you go. There you go.
Every time I look in the mirror, I have that exact same look.
Well, this guy is a Western guy, and you're a Western guy, so I'm not surprised.
Well, my wife also says I'm delusional. Like, so, you know, I don't know how seriously I would take that.
But as it turns out, it's Robert Taylor, who's Australian. I assume Robert Taylor has an Aussie accent that he has to drop to play the Wyoming sheriff, right?
He does, like that. But it's kind of interesting the way he approaches it, because as soon as he sets foot on American soil, he starts talking like an American. Oh. And you would be extraordinarily hard-pressed, you know, to try and, you know, discern, you know, what his nationality was, other than thinking he was probably a sheriff from Wyoming.
Yeah.
And, you know, the production schedule for Longmire is about 4 months long. And so for that entire time that they're filming in and around Santa Fe, he's got his American accent on, even when he goes home and, you know, and is with his wife and child. And I'm pretty sure Scarlett, his daughter, is going to, you know, grow up with a kind of a split personality, unsure as to what her real nationality is,
really?
You know, 4 months out of the year.
Now, how about Lou Diamond Phillips, who plays Henry Standing Bear? What's his ethnic heritage? And tell us a little bit about him.
A little bit of everything in him. Like, I do know that he does have, you know, there's a good strong streak of Native American in him. And we're kind of fortunate in the fact that, you know, we live in a period in time where, you know, you can't slap a wig on Sal Mineo and call him an Indian. I mean, you know, there are a lot of really wonderful, you know, Native performers out there, you know, that really deserve a shot, you know, to be able to, you know, be able to play those roles, because those roles are, you know, as few and far between as they are, you know, should be played, you know, by Native actors. And, you know, they really wanted somebody who was going to be an incredibly strong actor for the character of Henry Standing Bear, simply because, you know, he's a strong character in the books, and they wanted him to be a compelling character in the television show, too. And they had a little bit of a problem, you know, trying to find, you know, somebody who they thought, you know, would be able to carry the weight of that particular role. And I remember, you know, whenever they sent me the DVDs of the auditions, which they did for a lot of the actors, you know, for the roles that they were playing. It was kind of interesting like that, because generally Hollywood doesn't do that either.
No, I guess not.
Yeah, and they sent us the DVDs, you know, for Robert and, you know, Katie and all these characters. And then they sent me the one. They didn't send me any for Henry. It was a while. Like, at night, you know, I figured, you know what, they're having trouble casting this role. They're having a problem. Like, and pretty soon this DVD arrived, and at the bottom it said Lou Diamond Phillips, you know, and I looked at my wife and I said, oh, he's way too young and too skinny to play Henry Standing Bear. Like, and so we put the DVD in and we looked at the audition, and the first thing I did was turn to my wife and say, when was La Bamba? When was that? Like, and so, you know, not that Lou doesn't go for 4 hours a day at the gym, you know, and run like 5 miles every other day. Like, so he's in incredible shape, but he is a carbon-based life form, so he's going to decay like the rest of us. Like, he has gotten a little bit older, like in the last 20 years, and but he's still in fantastic shape, and the big thing is he's just an incredible, incredible actor. And what's interesting for me was is that in the audition that he gave, there was an audition monologue that had three contractions in it, you know, and in the books, Henry doesn't use any contractions. And when Lou Diamond actually auditioned for the role, he took the contractions out. And I said, he's read my books. And he actually had gone out the weekend before the audition. He learned that the books, I mean, the television show was going to be based off of a series of books. Okay, and he ran out and bought the first three books, The Cold Dish, Death Without Company, Kindness Goes Unpunished, and read all three of them, you know, that weekend. And then came in that morning and knew almost more about the character than the producers and directors did. And so, you know, that pretty much put him on my A list, I've got to admit. Now he's actually my contraction reader. Whenever I finish a first draft of one of the books, I have to send it to Lou Diamond Phillips, and then he goes through and tries to see if I've left out and made a mistake and left any contractions in for Henry.
Well, I do want to spend a couple of minutes before we have to close here on the Western Star, because as I said earlier, I think it's really interesting the way you devised this plot. And maybe one way to kick it off for you to explain is the part where at the beginning Walt brings the novel Murder on the Orient Express with him, and how appropriate that would be.
Well, it explain. Starts off, you know, with Walt's, you know, doing a weapons recertification down in Douglas, like, and one of the younger sheriffs, you know, spots a photograph on the wall of an old 844 steam locomotive, and in front of it are 24 armed men with their light-colored hats and their gun belts. And he looks at Walt and says, is that you on the end? And Walt turns around and looks and says, yeah, that's me. That was 1972. That was the very last running of the Western Star. And the premise of the book is that from 1948 to 1972, the Wyoming Sheriff's Association held its annual meeting on a train that ran from Cheyenne all the way across the state of Wyoming to Evanston and back in one weekend. And Joe Ironcloud looks at Walt and says, 24 armed sheriffs on a train. And Walt looks at him and says, when we started. So it's a little bit of an homage, like, to Murder on the Orient Express. Like, and as you say, like, that, whenever Walt's getting ready to climb on board the train, he has a paperback copy of Agatha Christie's opus in his back pocket. And it actually falls out of his pocket as he's climbing onto the train, the only deputy in a train full of sheriffs. And the sheriff walking up behind him, like, picks it up and says, you studying up, youngster? And Walt says, no, I just, you know, since I got back from Vietnam, I need to have a book with me everywhere I go. And the older sheriff looks at him and says, well, she kind of had it figured out, didn't she? And Walt says, I don't understand. And he goes, well, there's only so many ways you can do it. He did it. She did it. They all did it. Nobody did it. He says, have you read that book yet, youngster? And Walt says, no, not yet, sir. Look, and he says, well, when you get finished, we'll talk. And that was kind of the challenge, like, to kind of take up the mantle of Agatha Christie and try and do something a little bit different with it. And hopefully I did.
Well, you certainly did. And there's another part of the novel that's very brief, but I thought very funny, in the sense that I think authors deserve an opportunity, especially a guy writing one that is in a series like yours is, to have a little bit of fun and bring perhaps his own personal interest into the book. And here we are in the middle of your book, and Walt runs into Grace Slick of Jefferson Airplane. Now, you must be some kind of a big Jefferson Airplane fan or not?
You know, I needed to have a rock star that was touring across Wyoming at that point in time. And, you know, as you might well imagine, that kind of thinned the herd, you know, pretty well. And it was kind of interesting for me, and I really wanted it to kind of capture that feel of the late 60s, early 70s, you know, of rock and roll and tour buses and all this. And Walt kind of has to grab a ride. Like, we're not really sure, you know, who this is that's on this big luxury bus that happens to be going across the southern portion of Wyoming. But Walt gets a little bit of help along the way. I think Lucian might have the best response to all that whenever he says, you know, well, you know, who's Jefferson? What's his airplane got to do with all of this anyway?
Right, exactly. That was great. So does that mean you actually did the research and found the Jefferson airplane was trekking through Wyoming in 1972?
Yeah, they actually were.
Well, when you were at the Sun Valley Writers Conference, I think you headed straight from there to the big 4th of July parade at Cody, Wyoming, where I believe they honored some of the cast from the series. I guess I have to ask the question, and we'll conclude on this. Did you ever have any idea when you started writing these novels that this thing would turn into the pop culture icon that it has? I mean, it's really pretty amazing. And frankly, you've got another guy right in the same state as you who writes about a DNR specialist who gets into a lot of crime fighting in Wyoming. And there's no comparison to where yours has gone and where others like his has gone. Comment?
Well, it's been interesting like that because, I mean, you know, everybody always says, well, did you suspect, you know, that there would be, you know, this kind of a response, you know, and my immediate response to that is that, well, no. I mean, if I was shooting for a demographic, you know, having a protagonist who was the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America, you know, probably wouldn't have been what I was shooting for. It's been kind of amazing to see like that, but I kind of have to give credit where credit's due like that. And you know, Greer Shepherd, the producer for the television show, probably said it best on one of the first conversations that I had with her. When she was, you know, talking to me about, you know, the possibility of them doing a television show, I did the usual thing that you do in any job interview. I started asking them questions too. And one of the questions I asked was why, you know, 250, you know, mysteries are produced, you know, published every month, you know, why would you choose my books, to think about making this television series with? And her response was that, you know, that we've kind of like, you know, had this anti-hero thing going on ever since the 1960s, and it's done nothing but kind of hyper-accelerate here in the last couple of decades to the point where it's very difficult to tell the good guys from the bad guys. And she says, to be quite honest, you know, Walt Longmire is really a kind of a true blue, you know, hero, you know, a guy that has a code, a guy that has a decency about him, a guy that cares about his, you know, his fellow human beings to the point, you know, to where he's willing to sacrifice his life, like, to make sure that they're safe and that their lives are good. And she said, you know what, I don't think we've seen that in a while, and I just think that audiences, you know, will respond to that. And as it turned out, I think she might have been right.
No question she was right. And once again, I want to thank you, Craig Johnson, for joining us today on Reader's Corner. The name of the last book, though not the last book, because, by the way, you said at that conference you're going to keep on writing books no matter what happens to the TV series, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Good deal.
I like to think that the reason why it is that I enjoy writing the books is the same reason why people enjoy reading the books, which is, you know, I just really like Walt's company. He's just really
exactly.
Good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we look forward, for those of us who haven't, in reading The Western Star, and we wish you the very best, and thanks for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Great. One of my favorites.
Craig Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today at Reader's Corner. Next week, Samantha Silva, author of Mr. Dickens and His Carol. Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research by Deborah Palmer. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner. To listen to previous interviews anytime, download our free app from Google Play or the App Store. You can find it by searching for Reader's Corner.